Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today I'm here with Adam Chris, who is running for State House 36 in the primary. He is running against Robert Harris. Adam, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thanks for having me. The pleasure is all mine.
So Adam, tell us a little bit about where the district is that you are running for, 36.
So District 36 is a combination of a couple of jurisdictions. So it is Lyman, Duncan, Welford, and a little bit of the outskirts of Greer that are in Spartanburg County.
What have you done over the course of your life that you feel like has prepared you to be a state legislative leader?
Our entire family are deep rooted in law enforcement and community service. My father did it for 30 plus years, the chief of police in Greer, and then he went to Columbia, and now he works with FBI LEADA, teaching leadership to all command staffs around the United States to make sure that their law enforcement are becoming better leaders instead of stagnant. My grandfather was a deputy sheriff for Hendersonville County and Buncombe County in North Carolina and was put on Martin Luther King Jr.'s protection detail, which I find that freaking awesome. In the 60s, when Mr. King went to Montreat at the Billy Graham Place and gave his speech, my grandfather was the head of his detail, making sure that he was protected at all costs. And pushed to go to West Point out of high school. I was appointed by Jim DeMint, and we decided that baseball was probably our path. So we decided to attend the University of South Carolina at Ray Tanner. And after that, I said, what am I going to do with my life? What do I only know? Policing. I went and became a Spartanburg County Deputy Sheriff under Chuck Wright. Delta 32 was my area, and I floated around. But the area that I policed is the area that actually I live in right now and the area that I'm running for. So I have an invested interest in this area. I protected this area at all costs and lived here, and my children go to public school here. And after law enforcement, me and my brother decided to co-found a security company. So what we do now is private security for strategic partnerships with Walmart shopping centers. But our big ones are the school District 5, which is in District 36 area. District 5 would be Burns High School. So what we do now is all the armed officers that are at the school protecting the children and making sure no weapons come in, those are our officers. So they're at all the middle schools, all the high schools, and they just added two new schools. We also do the crossing guards and other things. I'm currently serving on Lyman Town Council. I was elected in 2021 for my first term, and I'm still in that first term. So that's where I got my feet wet, and I really made a connection with the community and started seeing things that needed to be addressed that weren't being addressed, and certain comments from the community about we need new leadership and we need a fresh voice and somebody who actually cares about the people of District 36. That's what lit the fire and made me think, hey, let's jump into this ocean on this John boat and let's just ride the wave out and see where it goes.
You said, you know, you were a policeman living in the community that you served. And I think that's a really important part of the job for police.
I'm going to tell you something. I lived in this area as a deputy sheriff in Lyman Mill Hill. I remember this on 6 Piedmont Street. And I was a deputy sheriff making $27,282 a year. I was bringing home $480 a paycheck. I had a mortgage of $600. So I understood what police went through and how that they were not funded and how it was a strain on the community because we couldn't get good law enforcement officers. Nobody wanted to work for $27,000. And I could see how it really affected the community. And I lived here. I still live in the district, but I understand what the blue collar 40 worker understands. I still live here. That's a big thing for legislators. If they want to legislate, first question, have you lived in your community? Second question, have you ever interacted with your community? Third question, what have you done to make your community better? And I think I check all those boxes.
And what do you think for your district specific, what do you think the number one issue is, what's the biggest thing that you would tackle right away?
I can't really narrow it down to one because you have 42,000 people. You have 42,000 different thoughts. But I think the consensus of what's going on is police are not being funded correctly. Teachers are subject to almost being second-class citizens the way that they are funded through the state. Thirdly, the roads need to be drastically committed to making them better. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of making sure that these highways are taken care of. Now, these back roads have been neglected. Mm-hmm. And I take my children to school on these back roads. Most of the people don't take Interstate 85 to work. They take the back roads 29, 129. They need to be immediately addressed. Mm-hmm. I think those are the three key things that people are really bringing up to me. And also the immigration is more of a federal level thing, but people are really scared about that as well.
So those three issues were more for your district specific. What do you think the biggest issue is statewide?
Are you talking about the Republican Party, Democrat Party, or just all in a whole?
Just from a perspective of every constituent in the state, what do you think is the main thing that we should be focused on?
Unifying the Republican Party. Like Reagan, you need to unify and make sure that the Republican Party is strong and we have a great base and we have great ideas that need to be enacted into legislation. But right now we have fringe groups that separate themselves and can't even agree on what tie to wear. The Republican Party cannot get on the same page. I don't know for what reason, and I mm-hmm. guess people, their characteristics and maybe their attitudes are a little different, but you have to have somebody in there that is relationship building minded. And I learned that very well when I was a deputy. And here's one thing. It's good to have a message, but it's the messenger that is the bad person. So when I say that, you can have a great message, but are you a good messenger?
Some people are great candidates and some people are great legislators, but most people are not both.
But it takes a lot to be the all-out ace of spades. But when it comes to legislating, you have to play both sides and you have to be good at both, you know?
So you're primarying Robert Harris. Is there something specific or some reason that you felt like he's not doing the job, that he's not representing the Republican Party the way that you feel like you would?
How much time you got?
Not very much.
Okay. Let's set the record straight. Mr. Harris is a member of the Freedom Caucus, which is a fringed group that has lost touch with reality. Mr. Harris just moved here from Pennsylvania. He has no invested interest in this community. He's only lived here a couple of years. What does he know about blue-collar workers in Lyman, Welford, Duncan, and Greer? I grew up here. I went to school here. I policed here. He's had some radical viewpoints on legislation. He fathered a bill to execute women who are raped or victims of violent crimes because they do not want to have their predator's baby. What common sense conservative believes that you should award the raper and condemn the rapee? That type of belief is very dangerous. If you've ever worked a violent crime in your life, the last thing a victim of a violent crime wants to be reminded of is her predator. So you have to have grace and you have to have some sort of moral compass. Look, yes, I'm 100% pro-life. We're not talking about using abortion for birth control. We're talking about mitigating circumstances that people are put into. That right there is absolutely unacceptable. Also, not passing the budget where police raises are, where teacher raises are $5,000 to bring them up to $48,000. Also, not putting any money to roads and infrastructure, not passing the illegal immigration funding for SLED to make sure that we're taking the worst of society and putting them where they belong. So you have an individual that speaks and says, oh, I did this and this and this, but he only votes with his Freedom Caucus members. He has done nothing for District 36. Look at our roads. Look at our teachers. Look at our public education. Everything that surrounds us has not changed since Ms. Rita Allison left. And Ms. Rita Allison was a great advocate for our area. And what have you done? You've done nothing but make noise and say that you're most conservative person in the state house. Let me ask you a question, Grace. What conservative do you know votes no for law enforcement, votes no for teachers, votes no for public education, votes no for infrastructure, and wants to execute women who are victims of violent crimes? Don't worry, I'll wait. No, honestly, those are tough questions that need to be asked that he dodges. Yeah. He dodges them all. He's never been to one forum. He's never been to one meet and greet. He's never been anywhere that he could discuss this in public.
One thing that's really important to note about your race, too, is that this is a solid Republican district. There yes. is no Democrat running in this race. The primary, which is June 11th, is yes. the race. So do you feel like from a jobs perspective that there are sufficient opportunities for work in your district?
No, there's not. Specifically in Lyman and Welford area, a lot of people have to go to work either in Duncan or the outskirts of Greer. But yeah. Lyman and Welford need the most jobs coming in. Mm-hmm. Oh, and guess who voted against jobs and infrastructure in the budget? So when you don't have somebody who supports small businesses, I own one. I understand the struggles. You get it all the time where you say, I don't want infrastructure because I don't want the traffic. We already have the traffic because the people are traveling and messing our roads up to go to other jobs in other counties. We're already taking the damage from the roads. We want to grow good growth, not bad growth, but we want to grow, but we want to have somebody who actually has the values and the understanding of what it takes to make sure that this district is taken care of.
So now we're going to pop into the lightning round. Where you stand on these hot button issues from 1 to 10. 1 is if you disagree and 10 is you fully agree with current legislation or proposed legislation.
Okay.
First one is how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
Disagree.
So you're a 1.
Yep.
Okay. The constitutional carry law.
I agree that it's been time to do that. Yep.
Critical race theory, social emotional learning.
No, I do not think that should be in schools.
You do not. School vouchers for all.
You're talking about people using their $6,000 or
right.
whatever
Being
school
able to
that
go
they
to
want
any
to.
School.
Yes.
That's right.
Agree.
The heartbeat bill 6-week abortion ban.
Agree.
Medical marijuana.
Disagree. That should not be passed. No. That puts a strain on law enforcement and it's just a migraine waiting to happen.
Adam, yes. It was really great to get to talk to you today and we wish you luck.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much for what you do. Without putting people's voices out there, it's really hard for voters to grasp and understand the consequences of elections. And I think we've learned that with the current administration. And so I appreciate what you do.
Today, we're talking to J.R. Taylor. She is the Democrat running in District 38. J.R., welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you so much.
First off, tell us about your name, JR, because I think you probably show up places and maybe people aren't expecting a she.
That has absolutely been the case. I made this decision very early on that I was going to run as JR because in applying for jobs, I found that JR got more interviews. And I hope that is the same thing with some of the voters who show up who maybe haven't met me, who just think I look like a good upstanding guy based on that name. And the reality is I still am a good upstanding guy. I'm just going to be a little different when I show up.
So you're in District 38. Can you tell us a little bit about where that is?
District 38 runs from the North Carolina border in Spartanburg County, covering Landrum, Campobello, Inman, and then all the unincorporated areas south to Clark Road, the northern part of Boiling Springs, and mm-hmm. east over to Paris Bridge Road, out towards Fingerville, past Strawberry Hill.
You're the only Dem on the ticket, so you don't have anyone primarying you. But there are two Republicans on that primary ticket, Josiah Magnuson and Jason Shamus. What do you think the reason is, or do you know what the reason is, why a Republican would primary the incumbent in that district?
First, I want to go back and address something about being the only Democrat on the ticket. Not only am I the only Democrat this year on the ticket, I am the first Democrat to appear on this ballot for this seat since 2008. We have not had good representation and a good yeah. challenger in a long time. But from what I have heard, even the Republican Party is not happy with Josiah's involvement with the Freedom Caucus and how he's orchestrating legislation at the State House. And the party themselves sought out someone to run against him, is the way I hear the story.
Knowing that, what do you think the biggest issue in District 38 is?
On the face, as far as the Republicans are concerned, the biggest issue is women's health and controlling the health of other people. I don't think that's the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is our infrastructure, which Josiah has voted against receiving money to take care of for this area. He's voting against the interests of his own constituents. And I'm not talking just roads and bridges. It is absolutely crucial that we get quality high-speed internet to all of these areas for better educational and occupational opportunities.
On that note, is there a bigger issue statewide that if you win this seat, you would go to Columbia and focus on?
I think the issue is not just women's rights, but spending our time legislating how people care for their own body. Government getting involved in healthcare decisions is completely unwarranted. Most of the politicians are not qualified to make these decisions. They have not gone through medical school. I trust that physicians are trained and that they're knowledgeable and that they know the wants of their patients. They know what's safe to do and what's not. And I think those decisions should remain between medical healthcare professionals and their patients. So this goes for women, the transgender teens and adults that are now being restricted on their healthcare. And so far as expanding Medicare, we have elderly and young kids who are without health insurance because we're failing to offer the proper option.
I'm not even going to ask if you had a magic wand what the policy is you'd like to change immediately, because I think I already know.
You would be surprised. I thought about this a lot. Your magic wand does not say that I can change it, but I won't face the rest of the legislative year spent on trying to unchange it. So these hot topics are not something that I feel like the other side is willing to compromise on. The one I think that they used as a pawn that they were ready to compromise on, but just kicked the can down the road, was establishing a hate crime law in the state of South Carolina.
Knowing all of that, and knowing that the Democratic Party hasn't run anyone in that district in so many years, what do you think it is about the timing of this election that lays out a path for you to victory?
I think this year is a lot about the Freedom Caucus, unfortunately. I don't know how many of your listeners caught the last days of the legislature when they were talking about the bill regarding DHEC, the split that's upcoming on July 1st. And even our governor said it was the single most important piece of legislature that could be passed this year. And instead of passing that, our representative, the great, wonderful Josiah Magnuson, got up and tossed himself a pity party right there on the floor of the House, complaining about how he'd been mistreated all year. That does not serve anybody except his own ego. And it was disappointing to see that the legislation failed to pass because he insisted on this pity party. But it was really this stance that he took on defending the Freedom Caucus and how extreme they've gotten in their work this year. And as far as the Democrat side, what I can tell you is in your April 6th podcast, you and Caitlin were talking about people who had received a text message that week before Easter.
Yeah.
Trying to find a candidate. And you guys talked about, we wish we could find one of those. We want to talk to them. So I got that magic text message.
Oh, this is so great. I love it. Here she is, everybody.
So on a Friday before Easter at about 4 o'clock, I'm standing outside with my dogs in the yard. And I get this text message. We have an open seat. We need a candidate. And I'm like, what seat? What race is this? And they text me back. And I'm like, wait, I know the guy who's in that seat. I don't like him. I can't stand him. Yeah, tell me more. So the state party actually spent the weekend of Easter. In fact, we even spoke on Easter Sunday, answering my questions and talking about what this looked like to run. And of course, the filing deadline was noon on Monday. And so we were finalizing our conversations and covering the filing fee that Monday morning within a few hours of the deadline. And what it really boiled down to for me was a conversation I'd had with my mom, because I've never had lifelong political ambitions. It has not been my life dream to work in politics. So I was talking to mom about women's rights, and she reflected to me that she felt like she was too old to really say anything or do anything. These issues weren't a direct impact to her. And I pointed out she has friends and family members and neighbors who were affected by these bills. And she really just said she felt like she was on the sidelines. And I thought, okay, I'm being asked to run. And I can't say somebody else will do it. Funny enough, I'm the person that everybody goes to when nobody else is fixing a problem. My neighbors, when I moved to South Carolina, a little older than me, had two kids, right? Typical family structure. And when a tree fell across the street, they didn't call the county. They called me and they said, have you already called the county? And I said, yes. And they said, did you call about the power being out too? And I said, yes. And they said, yeah, see, I told them, we don't have to call anybody. You're going to take care of everything. And with that kind of reputation in my own neighborhood, why shouldn't I have that reputation statewide?
Obviously, you, as you've just pointed out, you are a community-minded person. Are there jobs or anything that you've done in your past that you feel like is a good preparation for your first day in Columbia?
So I've spent basically my entire life working on advocacy and fighting laws that either were good but not being enforced or were bad and needed to be challenged. Way back to middle school, I challenged my school on simulation education instead of dissection. I challenged my high school over Title IX because women's sports didn't get the same venues and practice fields and schedules. I set up a neighborhood watch association at my first house because they were dealing with vandalism in their community park and crime prevention for the vacant homes in the neighborhood. I've also run a Mensa chapter. If you're not familiar with Mensa, it's a high IQ society. I joined when I was 16. I was president of the Pittsburgh chapter for 3 years. So I've spent a long time focusing on laws and their impact to people. And what you'll find is people are unhappy when those quality of life issues affect them. Mm-hmm. They don't think about tracing it back to the specific law that caused this trickle-down effect. But I love that kind of research. I love digging in and saying, okay, we didn't control the tremendous house building and the growth in the upstate. And now our roads and bridges are falling apart and we don't have any protected green spaces, right? So the neighbors just see this, everything's getting expensive and our houses are growing and our roads are falling apart. But I'm looking at, you should have planned for zoning and maintenance and land management 15 years ago. You can't wait till these things happen.
That brings me to infrastructure, and you've talked a good bit about that. What many of the candidates have said are things like roads and cost of housing and schools. Do you feel like those are currently being addressed by the legislature?
So in this district, especially, it is absolutely the county not addressing it. We are an unincorporated area. And even the incorporated areas of Landrum and Enman and Campobello, they're not large enough to have a great enough impact. Most of the new housing has been built in the unincorporated areas where there is very unrestricted growth, unfortunately. So it is a county issue, but it's an issue that the counties are ignoring.
Right.
And things like replanting trees after deforestation to put in housing development can and should be handled statewide. Those are not issues we need to wait for the counties to address.
That's so interesting. And I love that you're focused on outcomes. Before, that's such a key takeaway for me of this interview, is that you're in, as opposed to spouting off a bunch of policies, you're looking at how the policy would affect people before the policy goes into place. And I think that's a really important part of understanding what that job is that you're essentially applying for, right?
And I think this comes from me not being a career politician and not having set my sights on this as a landing point, but that I've always done this work to represent my neighbors and my friends and my family, representing them in consumer issues and addressing their issues with the county because they don't know who to call. And
yeah,
it's not that I know who to call, but I'm willing to do the research to find out. Something as small as a street sign can make a big difference to people. It's paying attention to the details.
And your campaign is dependent on making sure that people see that those things supersede some of these hot button issues that get thrown around so quickly. And you can have the 6-week abortion ban, but your roads are going to be a disaster on your way to work. And so really, I guess it's helping people to understand what's more important on their list of priorities.
I think it's really important for voters to focus on how they want the legislature spending their time. South Carolina still has a part-time legislature, which is partially why the pay is so low. And you don't necessarily get the candidates that would be good at the job, because not all candidates can afford to do this work, even part-time. But if we only have 5 months to do this work, what do the people want us doing for 5 months? Is it dictating what kind of medical care people can get? Is it addressing the loopholes that exist in the constitutional carry law? Is it finally putting a hate crimes law on the books? What is going to change their life the additional 7 months out of the year? And I don't feel like currently the representatives in our legislature are listening to their constituents on the things that will impact their life the most.
In your district, it's fairly rural. And a lot of the companies that our state has approached have been more on the manufacturing side. Do you feel like we could do a better job in attracting the gray and white collar jobs to South Carolina?
I absolutely do. And I think that those jobs are crucial, not just for a variety in our economic development, but because those jobs are more likely to employ persons with disabilities. And South Carolina has the second highest unemployment rate for persons with disabilities in the entire country. That's a shame, and that has to change.
We are now going to dive into the lightning round. And this is where you stand on hot button issues, 1 to 10. If 1 is you disagree and 10 is you fully agree with the current or proposed legislation. And so I'm going to skip over some that we've done with some other candidates, because I think you've addressed things like transgender care and the heartbeat bill. Let's start with how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I'll give it a 2, maybe a 3. I think the process as lined out on paper appears good, but how it's actually being performed is not.
Term limits for state House and state Senate.
Given that there are none, I'll give this a 1. I think South Carolina has dug themselves into this hole purely because we do not have enough new, fresh faces and voices in state legislature.
Social emotional learning, what's been called critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion, how it's taught in schools.
So you can mark me down as a solid 1 for this, because not only am I female and I am a person who lives with a disability, I am also a minority. I'm a proud member of the Iowa tribe from Kansas and Nebraska. And for too long, Native American history has been erased, and we can't continue down this path.
Medical marijuana.
As I understand it, currently, South Carolina has no policy on it. I will give it a 4. The non-existence of a policy is not acceptable, but it would have to be well-crafted. We see too many bills that get passed into law that mean well, but the details are so important.
I am here today with Kyle White, who is running for District 6, which is in the upstate. Kyle, thanks for coming on Frogmore Stew.
Thank you for having me on. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
District 6, you're in the upstate. Can you tell us a little bit about the district that you are running to represent?
Yes, it's the entirety of it is in Anderson County, okay, which is where I've lived since my parents got out of the Marine Corps when I was 5 years old. Other than going to college and law school, I've lived in Anderson County pretty much my whole life.
Oh, wow. Did you say both of your parents were in the Marines?
Correct.
Your mom must be a tough broad.
She is. Ask anybody in Anderson County pretty much and they'll tell you.
I love it. What do you feel like in your life has prepared you to take on this challenge of running for state house?
I've lived in Anderson County pretty much since I was 5 years old. I have a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old who my wife and I are raising here in Anderson County. They're in school here. I went to school in Anderson County. I care deeply about the Anderson County community. I know a lot about it. It's been my home for most of my life. So I see myself as qualified from that standpoint because I'm invested personally in the community. In terms of professionally, I'm an attorney, and most of my practice involves litigating against the government. I have a unique understanding of the ins and outs of government, of the Constitution, that I can apply to the House position to benefit the folks in Anderson County.
Our legislature is a part-time legislature, so you basically have to continue working as well as having this other job, which I would argue is more than a full-time job when you are a House member. It obviously sounds like that's going to be beneficial in that you understand the limitations that the government puts on people. But do you feel like that gives you a better perspective to step into that job and be ready from day one?
I think it absolutely does. I think that my job right now involves holding the government accountable when it does wrong and trying to change the government in a positive way. Like you said, it puts a lot on your plate when you have a full-time job and you're in the House, but I'm ready for it. I've been a hard worker my whole life. I have built up a law practice that we're busier than we know what to do with, but I'm fortunate to have a great team, and they're ready to keep things going professionally back at the law firm while I'm working to serve the people of Anderson County.
So you're running in a very solid Republican district. In fact, April Cromer won by, I think, 82% last time. I don't even know if there was a Dem that ran against her.
I think that the fundamental difference between April Cromer and myself is that I see this job of the House member of District 6 to be exclusively to serve the people and to solve the real problems that are affecting people in District 6. And that's things like work towards getting our roads fixed, getting our bridges fixed, things like that in District 6. Making sure that our law enforcement officers and first responders get the resources they need in order to keep us safe. In other words, to fight for Anderson County and specifically District 6 to get its fair share of the tax dollars and its fair share of the resources that we need to keep our community moving in the right direction.
Do you think that there's one issue that stands out that's the biggest one that needs to be addressed in District 6?
I think that the main thing that people care about in District 6 is a strong and secure Anderson County. And I think a strong and secure Anderson County involves three S's. The first of which is a secure border. The second of which is supporting law enforcement. And the third of which is a strong Second Amendment.
When you say a strong border, do you mean federally, like at the Mexican border, or do you mean literally Anderson County's border?
I guess maybe both, and I can explain.
Are you going to build a wall, Kyle, around Anderson County?
To answer your question, we got a big problem at the southern border of the United States. We've got millions of folks coming over undocumented, some of which are coming here to perform labor, some of which are coming here to do crimes, and we don't really have any way of telling the difference. And so I, like many folks in Anderson County, are all for legal immigration, but the illegal immigration creates a big problem for a variety of reasons. And I think the federal government is not doing its part to secure that border. And you've probably seen that states have taken it upon themselves, including South Carolina, to provide resources to try to secure that southern border. When folks get over that southern border, many of them are coming to South Carolina, some of which are coming to Anderson County. That's why I think that first S for a strong and secure Anderson County is securing that border, because if we don't provide the resources we can as a state to help secure that southern border, it ain't going to get secured. Anyway, I think that's imperative and that's a priority to a lot of the folks in District 6. There were budget dollars in the last budget that were allocated to sending National Guard troops to the southern border to help secure the border. And my opponent voted against the budget.
So those are the three biggest issues in the district, the three S's. Is there something statewide that you would jump into right away?
The three S's affect us in terms of a strong and secure Anderson County, but those same principles hold true for the state as well. And I think if we don't have a strong and secure state or a strong and secure county, then a lot of the other things we don't have the luxury of worrying about. Because if we're not safe and secure in our own communities and safe and secure in our own homes, then a lot of the other issues aren't as important.
If you had a magic wand, is there one policy happening in the state that you would change as soon as you got there?
I think if I could wave a magic wand, it would be to secure that southern border, get law enforcement the resources they need, and make sure that the Second Amendment stays strong in the state. And I think all that kind of would be wrapped into the strength and security of the South Carolina community, but more importantly, the Anderson County community.
You brought up the Second Amendment a couple times. Is there something that you would want from a gun law in South Carolina beyond what we have in place right now?
You know, if folks get through the southern border and we see a lot of gang members, a lot of criminals that are included in the folks coming across the border, and law enforcement does the best they can, but let's say you have a home invasion in your house in Anderson County, and our sheriff has done an excellent job of making response times quicker in Anderson County, but they can't get there instantly. So folks have to be prepared to exercise their Second Amendment rights to defend their home against folks who may intend to enter and try to do them harm. And that requires a strong Second Amendment, which I believe that the state laws now are strong on the Second Amendment. And if I get elected, I would oppose any attempt to weaken those laws. And training is not required under our laws of South Carolina, but anything that can be done to encourage people to receive any training that they might need in order to defend their homes and defend their families would certainly be encouraged.
And what would you want the average voter to know about you? Is there something that you would like the voters to hear?
What I would like the voters to hear is that I'm somebody who is going to approach everything with a conservative mindset, but in a common sense way. And I'm going to work hard for everybody in the district to find solutions to real problems that people deal with on a daily basis. And I'm going to work hard to get Anderson County and specifically District 6's fair share of the state's resources. And that will be my primary focus as a District 6 representative.
What are the big companies that are in Anderson County? Where do people work?
We're blessed with several large employers. TTI is one of them. We have Bosch. We have numerous other manufacturing facilities. There are a lot of government employees in town as well. So we're blessed with a lot of good industry, good manufacturing facilities in Anderson County. And we hope that trend continues with bringing even more good and high-paying jobs to the district.
Do you feel like there's something that you could bring to the table in Columbia that would attract more of gray and white collar jobs in addition to those manufacturing jobs?
Yes. What I can bring to the table is that I will be focused on the job of the House District 6 member, which is to get the most resources I can for District 6, whether that's gray and white collar jobs, whether that's manufacturing jobs. And the way that I will approach it, I will work with people to make sure that budget dollars are used for things like that. I will not simply oppose for the sake of opposing. I will work to do what I can to move our community forward as opposed to bring it to a screeching halt. And I think all of those things will help bring those types of jobs to Anderson County and to District 6 specifically.
What's the infrastructure like in your district? Do you feel like your roads and your bridges and your water and sewer, the schools are good? How is the infrastructure?
Let's take those separately. The roads are pretty abysmal, and that is one thing that is very important to me, is doing what I can in Columbia to get our roads fixed. That's actually one of the reasons that finally pushed me over the edge to running for office. I'm tired of looking at the potholes. I'm tired of dodging potholes. I'm tired of not seeing a pothole and damaging the vehicle because you hit a pothole. All of these things are things that I'm fed up with and that other folks in my district are fed up with. And that's one of my priorities, will be working to get that fixed. In terms of schools, we are blessed with award-winning schools in the upstate of South Carolina. In fact, we just had one of our middle school teachers awarded the best teacher in South Carolina this year. Obviously, our school system has its issues. However, I think that the job of the House member is not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and try to tear down the public schools further, but it's to identify any issues that we do have, fix those, and continue to ensure that our local schools are good and that they continue to move in a positive direction and get even better. My father's actually a public school teacher. I went to school in Anderson County, so did my brother. My kids both go to school in Anderson County, and my niece and nephew go to school in Anderson County. So that's an issue that's very important to me, and I'm deeply invested in making sure that our schools trend in the right direction.
Yeah.
So water and sewer, that's something that we're going to have to address as well. With the influx of people coming to the state and specifically to Anderson County into this district, the infrastructure just has to keep up, and it's got to be upgraded. It's got to be expanded, and that would include the water and sewer.
Yeah.
And I'm committed to doing whatever needs to be done in Columbia to make sure that infrastructure keeps up with the influx of folks coming to our community.
The last thing is what we've been doing is the lightning round. So these are all kind of hot button issues, but rather than getting into the nitty gritty of them, what we've been saying is from 1 to 10, if 1 is that you disagree and 10 is that you fully agree with the current legislation or current proposed legislation. Okay, lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I think that's probably a 5, somewhere in between. I think something needs to be tweaked with the current system, certainly. But I don't think it's a situation where we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater and remove all lawyers from the JMSC. So we're close to having a good system, but it definitely needs some reforms.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
I think that's probably a 5 as well.
The diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, and what's been called critical race theory in schools, the legislation that was passed through the House about what teachers can and cannot teach.
So I agree 100% that there should be no teaching in schools or any action taken of any kind by the government that discriminates against anybody based on their race, gender, anything like that. That's true whether, regardless of what color somebody is. So I absolutely support any legislation that eliminates discrimination from schools or anywhere else. That would be a 10.
Transgender care banned for minors.
That would be a 10 out of 10. I absolutely support legislation that bans gender transition surgeries or anything like as to children.
School vouchers for all.
I think the devil's in the details on that issue, and I think that has been declared unconstitutional under certain details. I would never support anything that's unconstitutional as a House member. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to pick anything between 1 and 10 on that, but I would just say that if the plan that is proposed has all the components that have previously been declared unconstitutional, I would not support it as a House member.
And last one, the heartbeat bill / 6-week abortion ban.
Yeah, that would be a 10 out of 10.
That wraps us up. Thanks, Kyle. It was great to talk to you.
The meal prep's got me all set. The meal prep's got me all set.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.